Spoken word artists, griots, signifiers, and poets have throughout history documented events and movements through a somewhat more creative lens. Poet Sekou Sandiata, called the griot of our times by Vibe magazine, is one such person. The native New Yorker has been standing at what he calls the most famous crossroads in the black world, 125th Street and 7th Avenue, at pivotal points in history. When Che Guevara and Fidel Castro visited the UN and refused to stay downtown, a very young Sekou Sandiata was there. Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, and Nelson Mandela have all spoken from that crossroads in Harlem. Witnessing those speakers helped to shape his political thinking and his poetry. It inspired his poem about former South African President Nelson Mandela.
After 27 years running behind time, but he could never be late. While we wait, the drums in front of the bodega, hip-hopping, 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 Ashe. We pick these names from books to spell as perfect. Yeah, dreadlocked hair, the Africa we fashion like something to wear, has turned around and shaped us too. Maybe we don't know who and where and who and where the cord was cut, but it was. Now we jigsaw in the sun, hot without stopping.
During a discussion with Sekou this morning from his home in New York, we asked him how President George W. Bush has inspired him. He says he doesn't have a poem about Bush yet.
I think we have a government administration that is completely untrustworthy and doesn't have any real credibility, beginning especially with the president and the way in which the president was appointed. I think that's the first thing for me, that there's so much talk from the administration about democracy around the world and bringing democracy to other parts of the world. And I don't see this administration as a democratically elected administration. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, like many Americans, I don't trust the government, and I don't support imperial wars, which I see as being driven by greed and profit and power. And I think these are the real motives behind Bush and company and their desire for war.
If you had an opportunity to have President Bush hear your thoughts, if you could speak directly to him, what would you say?
I'd say, do the honorable thing, you know. And I don't know, what could I say to Bush? You know, to me, he's a man who, first of all, does not even qualify for the office that he holds. And by that, I mean that I think on the level of intelligence and character, he doesn't qualify, and certainly doesn't qualify in any democratic sense. In terms of the war against Iraq, I really don't think there's anything I could say to Bush, because I don't think Bush is in control. I think in many ways Bush is a perfect front man for other forces who are much more serious and dangerous and determined than he is. I think that he is sort of a hollow person who's been filled with the agenda of these, not even conservative, but also just right-wing forces who are bent and intent on what it is, you know, they want to do, as exemplified by people like Dick Cheney and Ashcroft. I'm really interested to hear more about what I've been hearing, that already in preparations for this war, that the company Halliburton has been given some sort of sole source contract already, military contract, for the war. I find this to be just a blatant conflict of interest, given Dick Cheney's relationship to Halliburton and all of those things, and how in these times, unlike in times past, these right-wing forces don't even put any shade on what it is they want to do. You know, in the past, they had these covert operations to overthrow people and to assassinate people. Now that stuff is talked about openly.
It's called regime change now.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, you don't think, however, that there's some credibility, some validity and justification in wanting to defend the American people from a possible biological or chemical attack from Saddam Hussein?
Well, that's what I was saying earlier. I think that there is that these motives, these, you know, greed, power, and profit, are masked by probably some true and very real concerns about Iraq Saddam Hussein's intentions with these weapons and so on. The regime of Saddam Hussein, to me, is an imperial regime. You know, I don't recognize that as a democratic state. It's not any model of democracy and human dignity. So it's not like I support that regime either. The question, though, is for those of us who are opposed to United States advancing this war, is then what do we do about that? In other words, yes, I do think that there is some credible threat there. The question is, as progressive people, well, how do we deal with that?
Ritual poet Sekou Sundiata. His progressive politics today evolved from a background of a self-admitted radical revolutionary.
You wouldn't use that word if you knew what it meant. It ain't pretty. It's bloody. It overturns things. Mushroom. Hiroshima. The poison mushroom. Nagasaki. Not a thing can be done to it.
David Rovix is one of the most well-known political folk singers in America today. He has become something of a fixture in the North American protest scene, performing at demonstrations across the continent. We thought it would be interesting to hear some of his perspectives as we lead up to the war, as he expresses it through his political music.
We want a safer country, and it's in God we trust. So we'll bomb you during Ramadan, turn your world into dust. But pull up on your bootstraps, stand on your own 2 feet, as we blow them off with cluster bombs disguised as something to eat. We stand for freedom and prosperity, so we'll bomb your schools and hospitals, make sure you live in misery, and all you evildoers, and your children and your wives. With our B-52s, we'll show you how we value civilian lives. Give us your hungry, your restless, we'll show you democracy, a military trial, and detention indefinitely. We'll have homeland security, Thomas Ridge, all hail. We may not find the terrorists, but we can throw the left in jail, and we will all be safe, and we shall have no fears, once our retinas have been scanned, and all the walls have ears, and we're all in good hands when the FBI...
David Rovix. What's a nice folk singer like you doing writing such radical songs like The Flag Desecration Rag, Bomb Ourselves, Good Kurds, Bad Kurds, and Drink of the Death Squads? Whatever happened to the nice folk songs about special loves and love of life and the love of country, for God's sakes?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's really the folk tradition has been, people have been writing about this stuff for a long time. It's really, I mean, I think... it's more the question of, you know, what happened to folk music when the music industry came along and started, you know, telling people that the only thing they wanted to, you know, record or sell records of was stuff about relationships. You know? That's always been a popular subject for songs, but stuff happening in the world has always been a popular subject.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
What inspires your songs?
Well, Bush has been my greatest inspiration, really, I'd have to say. He's been wildly inspiring. I mean, the contradictions of the people running our world into the ground. I think that generally the most inspiring thing for me lately has been his speeches. And, you know, he says something like, you know, we're going to hunt down countries that are harboring terrorists. Meanwhile, you know, here we have the School of the Americas in Georgia and the, you know, terrorists in Miami and terrorists all over the country. And, these kinds of contradictions are good fodder for songs and I guess I'm inspired by people's struggles around the world, here in this country and around the world, and inspired in a sort of macabre way by, you know, villages getting destroyed by bombs and stuff like that. I mean, it's every one of those situations is worthy of a song. Every one of those people struggling, every one of those people being killed, they're all worthy of songs. And I can't write possibly nearly enough of them.
Mm. I read on your CD package a statement you wrote that says, "Don't let anyone tell you there's something wrong with you if you find yourself sobbing for the empathy you feel for the malnourished, dying children of Basra." The Bush administration says the people of Iraqi, or the people of Iraq, are our friends, and that's part of his justification for wanting to attack Iraq and rid them of the president, Saddam Hussein. How is that playing in Gainesville, Florida, where you are?
Well, I mean, I guess I tend to play for activist audiences, and when I have the opportunity to sing for people who aren't in the activist scene, which I always relish, you know, people are usually really sympathetic and really interested and really concerned about what our government is doing, and you know, I think to a large extent, you know, Bush is able to play on people's fears, and those fears of, you know, terrorism and other fears that people have, weapons of mass destruction, all that. You know, he's, you know, being able to nail some good ones that people are, you know, are afraid of those things. But people are, I think, a lot of people are confused, and a lot of people are really just upset about what the government is doing, and Bush's unending war. And they don't want anything of it. But I think a lot of people feel powerless. They feel like they're not being heard. And they're certainly not on NPR. You know, they're being heard on Pacifica. But, you know. Yeah.
Have you written any songs for President Bush lately?
Let's see. Hang a Flag in the Window I wrote last spring, and Bomb Ourselves. And, I mean, specifically for the Bush administration, you know, I guess the last one that was really inspired by a speech by GW was "Bomb Ourselves." In "Hang a Flag in the Window," actually, I do address the axis of evil in the third verse. but yeah, that would be a fine yeah. I mean, turning stuff on its head, I think is a really a powerful way to do things, like the kinds of articles that The Onion does all the time. You know, it's just, there's just, I mean, you can make satire out of this. You can make serious songs out of this. You know, but the contradictions need to be exposed, and I think when you do expose the contradictions, especially if you do it in some kind of way that appeals to people on an emotional level, whether it's whether because it's funny or because you're really without using catchphrases, just talking about the what happened or some situation, and you know, so that people can relate to it on an emotional level. People do relate to it.
If I could sing a song for every bomb that flies, I'd sing each and all the days. If there were to be a verse for every dying child's cries, for every helpless father's gaze. If I could write a love letter for each corpse as it's carried, I'd never still my pen. If I had to stop a moment for each one as it's buried, I'd never move again. The stocks are going up somewhere in America. But I'll sing a song for Basra.
Spoken word artist Steve Connell from the Underground Poets Railroad exercises his right to speak out in this piece brought to us by KPFK in Los Angeles.
This one's called "I Disagree." I am an American. I have the right to remain silent. I wish to refuse that right. And if you refuse that right, then everything you say can and will be used against you. Well, I am a poet also, so that's what I fucking want. I am a poet and an American. In the mouth of poets, words are like actions. They define you. And if your words don't define you, then why the fuck are you talking? If you ain't trying to go forward, then why the fuck are you walking? You should sit down and shut up, and you have that right. But I'm a poet and an American, and my pencil sparks light with each word that I write, and I will stand there and fight to the dawn's early light. As the bombs burst in air, I'ma stare right there, and I'ma speak my fucking mind. I got that right. I am an American. Truthfully, in the truth you never fully told and still don't tell, but I tell the truth of who you are because I am who you are. I am an American, and I tell the truth. I am old women in department stores, built atop the consecrated bones of Crazy Horse. I sign credit card receipts like treaties. I don't intend to honor a legacy of a debt that can never be repaid. I am restitution for the sweet dreams that can't come to the children who died because, hush, little baby, don't say a word. And you can't say a word, because we built a Sears atop your grave. So you can't talk about the blanket soaked with smallpox that the government gave. I am the dead Indian baby swaddled in smallpox who watched the chickens come home. I, Malcolm X, I am not here to condemn America. I am here to tell the truth. And if the truth condemns America, well, she stands condemned. I am the bones of the men and the women that fell to ocean bottom like tracks of the Underground Railroad that led the wrong way to freedom. I am all the blank walls standing tall, a middle passage memorial to the names we don't know. I am Japanese American citizens standing in U.S. internment camps, concentrating on blank walls, remembering Harriet Tubman and slow dancing with the ghosts of Cherokees in prison in Alcatraz before they admitted Alcatraz was a prison and they called it a reservation. I am America. And if you say I'm wrong, if there is nothing, if we are not our history, if there is nothing but our present, then we must re-examine our scriptures with an eye for historical context, look at our Constitution with a mind to reaffirm, for we are not created equal until we say so. No commandments are contractually binding. All rights are alienable again, and freedom isn't certain. But this is, I am an American, and I pledge allegiance to no flag. And our states are not united until the republic for which it stands, one nation under God. I say to you this, there could be no one nation under God, unless that nation is the world, because God made the world and man-made nations. And if God were to honor man-made nations, he would do so with this condition, that he honor them all equally the way he made them. So to pledge to one is to pledge against others, and to pledge against others is to pledge against God. And I am not ready to go to war with God. And despite the fact that I think war is wrong, Johnny Ashcroft, I am an American, and I will not be silent. I will not be silent because you will be. I will not be silent because you disagree with me. I will not be silent because you think it wrong to disagree with my country. You should read the Bill of Rights and understand it was my country's idea. I am an American, and I will not be silent, and you should use this fish against me.
Sweet Honey in the Rock, the Grammy Award-winning female a cappella ensemble, has toured all over the world spreading peace and understanding through their powerful singing voices. Their message often speaks out against oppression and abuse. During this time of war versus peace, group leader Bernice Johnson Reagan offers some encouraging words, reminding all of us of the value of speaking up rather than staying silent.
One of the things we do in our concerts is to affirm the importance of understanding if you're a responsible member of your community, you have to talk about what you think about what's happening, and that silence is very dangerous for democracy. And sometimes when you get things as an intense as the bombing we went through in Washington and New York, as intense as some of the things that have happened, also when a trauma like that begins to be manipulated to get you on board to endorse a foreign policy strategy, and if you want to say, wait, I have a question about this, someone suggests that you're not being patriotic, we really say that it is our responsibility to say, wait, that being critical of your country is a gift that you give as a citizen to that country. And the country needs to respond to your questions. It should never be suggested that if you say, I cannot go along with this as a response, that you are actually letting your country down, or you're letting your sisters and brothers who are in the military down. I remember during Gulf Storm, it felt like we were every night in our Black History Tour performing in a city that had a base, a military base. And our audiences were full of people who came holding something. And I remember one night I said, it is possible to say I have trouble with our participation in this war, and at the same time, I have absolute support and prayers for our children, our sisters and brothers and mothers and fathers who are over there in vulnerable and endangering their lives. And so the whole thing of holding both, when I said it, there was this applause. People just stood up. And I think sometimes people forget what their path suggests to them in terms of the way we move to the decision. So we work very hard to give people support for discussing the issue right now about Iraq, for discussing what they're feeling about the Palestinian and the Israeli ongoing conflict and war, and not to be silent.
Bernice Johnson Reagan of Sweet Honey in the Rock. Special thanks to Mayuki Williams of WPFW's A Sunday Kind of Love.
Gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside.
Since September 11th, the right wing has seemingly co-opted the American flag as a symbol for revenge against Osama bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda network. Along with that mindset, the word patriotism has come to mean those who march in lockstep with the administration's cry for war. But in tonight's final segment of Imperatives for Peace, Pacifica's Peace Watch, we want to reclaim patriotism for those peace-loving Americans. In this segment, we offer the thoughts of poet, social activist Sonia Sanchez as she spoke with Pacifica's Amy Goodman and I during September 11th special broadcast. Sonia Sanchez.
I think that tragedy can change people and make people evolve, but I think that one of the things that we must do more than wait for tragedy to happen is to teach people how to be human. You know, a tragedy should not make us then assume human qualities. And do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not, this is not a negative thing about what has happened with people who have assumed these roles and have found out that it is important to act in a human way, in a humane way with people. But I think we've got to continue to teach people through our literature, through our teachings and whatever, that it is important, you know, to be human from the get-go. You know, we've got to begin to teach our children not to play with guns. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We've got to begin to talk to people that, you know, to control this anger that they have, not to curse people out, not to exploit people. That's what I'm talking about. You've got to, you know, show people how to drop what I call twin seasons of privilege and inferiority. Because, and then we'll see a world then free of myths and social ills, you know, because some people have privilege. I mean, it is something to be privileged, is it not, you see? And some people, you know, think that indeed that they are inferior. So you have to ask the questions, what does it mean to be privileged from the very beginning, you know, and begin to have people talk about that without a tragedy, you know, and then come and ask the question, well, how do we live then? Is a country always right? What day was 9/11, you know? We have to ask them, how do you love, finally, okay? And finally, how to resist? How do we finally resist the kind of madness that countries, in a sense, you know, lead us towards at some particular point? And how do we resist being taught how not to be human, how to be cold with each other, you know, how to continue to rape countries and rape each other and rape communities? How do we teach people simply to help people improve their lives, period, in this country and the world? And we've got to do that. It's not anything easy, but we got to do it, because, you know, I might be quoting it wrong, but I have part of it. Toysor said, there are men who say, I sit on a man's back, choking him and making him carry me, and yet I assure myself and others that I'm sorry for him and wish to lighten his load by all possible means except by getting off his back. You know, and we've got to know that this earth can no longer hold those people who choke or who are choked. And that is something that we've got to understand, take in and understand, because we can no longer think that war is going to solve everything on this earth. It is not going to.
It has taught us an important lesson about the interconnectedness of us all, has it not?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We are all connected, you know. You know, if there's a famine someplace on one part of the earth, you can be assured it's going to affect us. But the point is that we want to think that we are not connected, because we've got to say we in this country, most of us who walk towards abundance in a sense, right? We got to say, I remember a time when that didn't happen. I remember a time when the country has not walked towards abundance, okay? You know, we can never forget people, human faces, you know. We can never forget the earth and the sea, and we can never forget the love that we have for peace, justice, and truth, you know. This is what we've got to say every day. It's like saying a mantra. I say a mantra in the morning, you know. It's a mantra about peace, peace, peace. Peace, peace. We must have peace, 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 peace. Peace, peace, peace. We got to walk, peace. We got to move in peace. We got to talk peace. We got to look for peace every day on this earth when we go outside, because peace is finally what will make us survive on this earth, period.
Peace Watch is produced by Scott Gurian. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance today from Marcus Tyler Brown. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.